Africa Prime, brought to you by Jameson Select Reserve.
He has traversed war zones, survived prejudice, and proved that Africa can make a positive contribution to mankind's condition. In that time, he has gone on to save yet more lives across 33 countries he's generously given relief aid to. He's Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman, founder and chairman of Africa's largest relief aid organization, Gift of the Givers, and he joins us now in studio. Thank you so much for joining us. And you have just come back from the DRC. Do tell us what you were doing there.
I came back from the Republic of Congo.
Yes.
But people confuse the two, but the Republic of Congo is across the river from DRC. We were responding to a crisis. An explosion took place in a residential area. There was an ammunition depot within the residential area, and on Sunday, the 4th of March, an explosion took place. They said it was a short fuse. Some of the weapons caught on fire, and slowly, explosion after explosion followed. When we were there on the 9th of March for the first time, you would swear that this an earthquake, the scale of 9 on the Richter scale, hit this area, because there was just nothing standing. Everything was destroyed. It just showed how violent, how powerful, and how strong these weapons were, or this ammunition was. 5,000 homes destroyed. A school, a church, the police station, everything inside completely flattened. The official count is 252 people dead. To me, it's probably more than 500 have died.
Now, operating in 33 countries, how do you prioritize where you're needed the most?
Well, most of these are one-off responses, except in Somalia, we're there for quite some time now. In Malawi, we have a permanent office. And of course, in South Africa, we have four permanent offices. We respond, we work in South Africa all the time. But on the international disasters, it's given the magnitude of the disaster makes us decide where to go. For example, the tsunami in 2004 was huge. It affected 13 countries. There was no need to wait to see what's to be done. Obviously, the whole world could not respond, and would never be enough, the scale of the destruction. The earthquake in Haiti in 2010 was huge. The famine in Somalia in lastly 2010. The famine in Niger in 2005. The earthquake in Pakistan in 2005. Mm. So those are the type of crises where they're huge, and you know, you require a response. You need to do that. On the flip side, the same time that Haiti got hit, a few weeks later, Chile got hit by an earthquake. And the Chile government said, we don't want any international assistance. Mm. And they managed on their own. A few years earlier, Mozambique got hit by a cyclone. And they said, we're quite fine, we can manage on our own, we don't need assistance.
One of the things that I found actually quite interesting is that you say to be the largest organization of your kind operating on the African continent of African origin. But then you're not just operating on the African continent, you've mentioned so many other countries that you work on outside of the continent. And one of the things that I found was really interesting when I was reading up on you was that, you know, when you go into some of these countries, people are saying, you know, have you come for aid? What do you want from us? You know, when they hear that you're from Africa, and then you go in and you say, no, actually, we're coming to give you assistance. Just how has that been, you know, changing the stereotypes and, you know, the perceptions that people have of our continent?
There's two stories, or basically three stories, you know, to talk about. One was very sad, you know, when it was, I met a Malawi ambassador to the United Nations. He was an ambassador many years ago. And he told me one day, he said, you know what, I need to tell you a story. He said, I was in Europe many years ago, and there was a big conference discussing issues in the world. And there were very few African diplomats in that conference, and we felt very shy because we were outnumbered. And he said, after 3 days, it struck him, and it struck the other diplomats, that the word Africa, or the name of any African country, was not mentioned once in those 3 days. They spoke about all the other countries and the other continents and the other parts of the world. So on the third day, he said, I felt a bit shy, I felt a bit scared, but I got brave enough to ask the convener of the conference, my friend, why was Africa or one of the countries not mentioned once? So he said, you know what answer he gave me? He said, Africa is not relevant. Hmm. And when I heard that, I said, you know what, one day we will make this continent relevant. In 2005, we walked into Pakistan. We came again for earthquake response. And there were Western organizations there who saw us. They were confused because, I mean, our teams, it's a rainbow nation. You know, it's black, white, Indian, colored, Hindu, Muslim mix. So they don't really know which country you come from. Mm. And when I said, we're from Africa, you're from Africa? What did you come here to fetch? I said, what do you mean, what did you come here to fetch? He said, you guys are always asking with a begging bowl, always wanting things. So I said, no, we came here to help. And let me tell you something, my friend. We've got the most highly skilled medical team in the world, and not any organization here today will match us. And that's what the Pakistan government said. And we were the only team given a whole hospital that was shutting down, and we converted it in 24 hours to a 400-bed emergency hospital. And to me, the real, you know, the headline came in 2010, when we sent the team to Haiti. And when they got there, the search and rescue team and the medical team, and it is the first time in the history of the African continent, in the history of the world, that a team from Africa, a search and rescue team from Africa, found a person alive in the rubble, in any earthquake, in any part of the world. We made history. And it was focused, filmed live on many in networks all over the world. But to me, the highlight was when, again, Western teams came to the area, to Haiti, and they looked at the area and they said, we cannot work here. Everything is destroyed. So the South African team stepped forward and they said, we can work under any circumstances. And to the credit of those Western teams, they told the people in Port-au-Prince that if you want help, go to the dream team. And the dream team is from South Africa.
Wow. What an amazing story. What I would like to ask you, you've pointed on so many things I would really like for us to delve into. You've pointed on quite a few issues there. But one of the things in there, you were talking about how highly skilled your team is. How do you attract these skills to be able to work? I would imagine that when they're working with you, they're not getting paid the kind of monies they would get paid if they were working in the private sector, for instance.
You know, it is a general statement that Africa has got a heart, it's got a soul, it's got the Ubuntu spirit across the continent. These are medical doctors who come from expensive clinics. Some of them may be any even 30 to 40,000 rand a day, you know. Not only do they give up their time, they may have to stay in an open air in tent with no sanitation facilities, no ablution, you know, no bathrooms, and they have to come from that five-star house to a situation like that. And they come not once, they come over and over again because they have this passion to work. We have a core team of different specialities. Most of the specialities are related to trauma. Earthquake, volcano, war. The disaster, the destruction is the same. You need orthopedic surgeons, general surgeons, emergency medicine specialists, anesthetists, ICU nurses, theater nurses. Those are what you need. We have a core team. In a case like Somalia, where there's famine, you need pediatricians, dietitians, people specializing in primary healthcare. So we have different categories of people. And we've got this core group, but we make an announcement. We even have a database. People say, you know what, I've seen you on TV. Can I come next time? This kind of story, we want to go. And so we build a list. But whilst we have the list, we still open it out to the public. And it just so happens that people will call in, and every time we have a new, three or four new ones, but they're old ones. And that's how you develop a network of people.
Another thing that I found really interesting was that your team seems to be really on the edge of innovation. I mean, when people say, but who are you, where are you coming from, and you're coming from the African continent and not really giving you the accolades that you deserve at the time when you go into a place. I mean, when it comes to Bosnia, for instance, you say to have been the first organization to build a mobile hospital in that particular area. Have you been able to replicate that model into other places that need it?
It wasn't necessary at that time. You know, first of all, that hospital is a world first. And again, it was designed with South African technology. In Africa, in the south of Africa in 1993, it's a world first, and up till today, nobody has replicated that hospital, that model. To replicate it today, the cost factor is horrendous. Because that time it was 280 to the dollar. Now it's 800 to the dollar. And that's only the currency exchange. But in terms of labor costs, shipping, fuel, you know, transport, manpower, it's far too expensive to do that. We have another concept. Now, initially, we started off as response teams, taking tents, blanket, and food. Then we started taking primary healthcare teams, and we started taking medicine, simple things. Now we take fully fledged theater teams. Then we've been taking orthopedic and surgical instruments. We are now looking at field hospitals in terms of lightweight tents. In Somalia, we put up a theater in 1 hour. We took in our own theater tables, own anesthetic machine, own oxygen. We were the only team in the whole country that had oxygen. No hospital, no facility, no organization, even medical organizations had no oxygen in Somalia, only we had it. And we're looking at systems how to be efficient, but with lightweight, practical, portable items. And we have regular meetings building up these kind of things to take with to respond. So the hospital was not replicated. There was no need to replicate it because now it becomes very cumbersome to move. In that time, of course, they needed it there. But now it's just faster to take lightweight things to respond.
When you're talking about all of this, I mean, this is a lot of money that goes into this. I mean, I would imagine that you have people, donors that come in. How do you fund all these operations?
Well, it's very strange. We don't look for money. Right. We don't make proposals. We don't call people. We don't phone. No. We announce. We don't even advertise. When I say we don't advertise, it's not paid. We have free coverage from the media. And because we have such a track record, because the media has traveled with us, people can see we're very transparent. They can see how their money is being spent. They can see how people are benefiting. They can hear from the people on the other side what they're saying about what we're doing on the other side. And they can see all that. And even in the country, everywhere we go, people speak about what we do. So because of that, you would find regular donors saying, you know what, here's money, do what you like. And you'll have a specific project where people would say, look, and these are not big companies, these are very ordinary people. For Somalia, for instance, people, very small people who are poor, I mean, in an informal settlement, people collected 42,000 rand in an informal settlement when the kids in the school don't have food to eat themselves. In another area, an old age home where people have dinners, you know, once a year, a function, they said this year, no dinner. We don't want the dinner. People in Somalia need it more than us. That's the Ubuntu spirit that I'm talking about, not only among doctors, but amongst all the people of Africa. And people in the country, poor people said, look, we are refugees ourselves, but we can identify being what a refugee is like, moving out from the south, coming to the north, looking for food and looking for a house. We haven't got much, but whatever we have, we will give you. And the volume increased like that. We spent 70 million rand on Somalia. It has been our biggest project to date in our history. And it happened in just over 2 months. Because South Africans responded in such a manner because of their compassion.
I want to talk a little bit about Somalia, because one of the things about Somalia is you're talking about transitional government, and it's been that way for a really long time. You've got people that are living in Somalia leaving that country because they feel it's not safe and looking for opportunities elsewhere. People who are not in Somalia are afraid to go to that country, and yet you're operating there. You say it's your biggest project and gift of the givers. When it comes to building those relationships, how do you operate in a place like Somalia?
In any kind of project, it is about attitude. You have to go in to say, you know what, I'm not going as a politician. I'm going as a humanitarian. As a humanitarian, you transcend all politics. You don't take sides. You don't say who's right, who is wrong. Because all you want to do is get to the recipient of aid. Because the person on the other side doesn't want to know which government sent you, which political party you belong to, how you came, which side are you taking. All he wants to know is, can you save the life of my child? And what are you going to do about that? My husband is hungry. Can you give him some food? My child hasn't had milk for 5 weeks. Have you got something for that? That's all they're interested in. So when you go in, it's important for the government or the warring parties, if they are warring parties like in Somalia, know, you know what? These guys have got no agenda. They're not taking sides with us. They just want to go to our people. And that's exactly what we did.
Some of the aid that you take to Somalia goes via the sea. We do know that one of the issues that has been, you know, and not just stuff that's going to Somalia, but, you know, just when it comes to trade, for instance, that Somali water, well, waters that are anywhere near that place have been, you know, really, really dogged by Somali pirates. How have you been able to sidestep that?
That's the catch. Somali pirates are taking things not going to Somalia. They're not attacking things going into Somalia. And that's what we figured out whilst we were there. We've sent in by ship 132 containers of aid already, and it has been warmly received by all parties, meaning not all parties are benefiting, but the Al-Shabaab, the transitional government, the United Nations agencies, the Emission forces, the different tribes, the different warlords, the people on the ground, all know this is gifts of the giver stuff, and it is given across the board. We don't say, excuse me, which clan do you belong to before we give you aid? Who do you, which side do you take? We go to a camp. Actually, that was a story on its own. After 48 hours in Somalia, the different members of the committee, the Committee on Social Relief, came to the governor of the province and asked, who are these people? They just walked to the airport, got into the car, went to a camp, set up a hospital, and set up a clinic, and started treating people. Nobody came to us, and they just started distributing things themselves without any going through government. Mm-hmm. So the governor asked them, what is wrong with that? He said, I wish every agency in our history were like them. There's no politics, there's no side-taking, and everybody benefits unconditionally.
Thank you so much. Well, we are going to take a short break, Dr. Suleiman, because we do want to talk a little bit about the man and behind this fantastic organization, all the work you're doing. We're going to go to a short break, and we'll come back and delve into that.